All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. My name is Tom, participant, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local podcasters podcasting locally. I don't know. That sounded weird, but let's go with it. Good morning. How are we all doing today? It is a fresh, crisp morning, Saturday. I just wanted to check in a bit. I've had, a lot of shit's going on. I talked about getting the vaccine. That was a up and down kind of situation. I've shared a little bit with other people. I talked about a little bit of the guilt I had about getting that. I'm not guilty. I don't feel guilty anymore. I'm happy. I did share it with a client. I could tell he was annoyed. But you know what? I get that. I was annoyed. But then I had to take a look at it. Am I annoyed or am I just jealous? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to have people being jealous. I don't want to be jealous. You know, you try to do the right thing. There's still that other side. You know, there's David and there's Tom. You know, and David's like, you know, we got to do the right thing, you know. We got to wait. No young person shall be vaccinated before a 65-year-old ever. Unless you want it, right? I mean, that was my position. Unless it's offered to me. Then I was like, okay. And you know what? It's happening all over the place. People are getting the vaccine. I mean, the reality is we need to all get this vaccine. Unless you have a personal thought on it that doesn't agree with that, and then that's your opinion, and I respect that. But I feel to get back to some sort of, you know, and if normal to me is just not wearing masks, then that is normal. Get back to normal. Right? I mean, I think we will eventually get back to pretty much where we were before, minus 500,000 people that passed away from this virus. But we will revert back to where we were, doing all the things that we were doing, which I guess is fine. I don't know. None of my business. I posted a picture wearing a shirt the other day that said, humiliation, the original medication. And I'm like, of course people will understand. They'll get that. Not a lot. I mean, I had a bunch of people reach out. Love that shirt. I don't sell the shirt. I've thought about it. I may. It's a big, big undertaking. Getting people the shirts that they'd like to buy. I don't want to fuck that up. So I'm not really that excited about, I don't know, a merch, but I love the shirt and I love the message. Humiliation, the original medication. And the only reason I understand that or think about that or realize what that kind of plays in my life is because I'm sober, right? I mean, when I decided to walk through the doors, not just of AA, because there are those doors. You walk in, you definitely go through those doors, but there's another set of doors that I went through at some point. And it's the doors of surrendering, you know, acceptance, courage. And when you walk through those doors, or when I walked through those doors, I started to learn about other things, self, the battle of self. You know, I talk to people all day about recovery. I have clients that have family members or they are struggling. You know, we have the face that we see. Everybody puts on the good face. But once, you know, we're by ourselves or alone in our house or alone with our demons, you know, there's a lot of us that suffer. And maybe it's okay, right? Maybe it's okay. But to understand about humiliation, you know, I spent a lot of my recovery time thinking that I got sober because I wanted to be sober. But I didn't. I got humiliated. You know, there's self is driving the bus. And when humiliation hits the bus, the first person to bail off the bus is self. Self's out the door. Oh, I'll be back. But I'm not sticking around for this. Not around humiliation. Ego devastation. To me, is humiliation. You have humility. You have humble. And then you have the ultimate. Ego devastation. Humiliation. That's when ego says, I'm out. Self. Call it what you want. Self, ego, pride, all that shit is all self. When humiliation shows up, ego's out the door. And that's where you're really, you cleared the room. Now we can have a conversation. What do you want to do? I want to get better. Self left. Pride's out the door. Ego ran out the window. It's just me. And when it's just me, the reality is I do want to be better. And that's where the miracle takes place, you know? I talked about it the other day, you know? I was sober. I was fucking free from the demon. Or free from one of the demons. But humiliation was nowhere to be seen. Ego shows back up. Self shows back up. We have a conversation. We decide that I think I can drink again. There's no voice of reason, the humiliation voice. Because he shows up and it's just... boom, humiliation's here. I'm only staying for a short period of time. Jump on if you want, but the humiliation bus will be checking out soon. I'm not even posting the time. Get on the bus or fucking don't. Humiliation drives off. And away we go. But I didn't understand that. I didn't know anything about that. I thought humiliation was, oh, I'm embarrassed. I'm going to go run and hide. But humiliation is the original medication. You know, a nice dose of humility, humble pie. What do they say? Humble pie is best served warm. But I didn't understand. I heard that before. But I didn't know what that meant. Until I decided to try to get sober, until I decided to walk through the second set of doors, the doors that say surrender. How can I make this better? What can I do to help? What can I do to help fix me? And it's a two-part position, I guess. A two-part attack. You know, I can't do it by myself. Self isn't going to do it at all. You know, but when humility shows up, and it will, that's when you start looking to that second set of doors.
She can't shoot what she sees.
think back to the person that I was, and I think back to the life that I lived and the life I was living, and I look at it and I think, how can I ever get out of this? How can I ever be better? Not understanding about getting better, but just appear better. I mean, I've spent all this time getting to this low point in my life, which at the time I didn't really care, right? I was young. You know, I think about the time moving to California, just young, 19 years old, just fucking whatever, right? Not worried about the end, not worried about dying, not worried about a career. All I was worried about was having fun. And I had a lot of fun. You know, doing what self wanted to do. But it's weird when I look back at that lifestyle, and I don't really consider myself being an addict or an alcoholic or a, you know, drug addict. You know, I didn't consider myself any of that. I just considered a person having fun. And it's all these weird habits that we get into, you know. I remember when I started, you know, using meth and creating new habits about building relationships with people that would allow me to get closer to that drug. You know, I think of all the people that I brought into my life so that I could get what I wanted, whether it was partying, you know, relationships with people that I thought made me appear better. You know, it wasn't ever about, like, you know, where some people, young people, they want to have relationships with people to make their career better, you know, to improve their life, their future. You know, mine was always about improving my ability to score more drugs. And if you could get drugs, then it was about scoring the best drugs. Just that, you know, hanging out with people that you would never hang out with. You know, if I looked at my life, where I was and where I am today, and at what point I was at a certain in that drug career, and I thought to myself, I would never be like that. You know, I'd never hang around with guys in the Mexican mafia that fucking smuggled ephedrine across the Mexican border from Tijuana, making this incredible dope. I never thought I'd hang out with people like that, and that's the kind of people I ended up hanging out with. If I looked at that today, in my life that I live today, in just 1 minute of that lifestyle, I would be fucking freaking out. But I slowly ended up there. You know, one little sniff, and next thing you know, I'm building relationships with people and interacting with people that are getting me closer to the good stuff. I'm throwing away the rules that I had set for myself early on in life. You know, be a good person, be honest, don't do drugs, don't drink. You know, I'll never forget my neighbor asking if I wanted to try the clove cigarette. And I was like, yeah. And I think she said, it gives you a buzz. I'm like, definitely. And I remember toking it like a joint. You know, holding it in, a clove cigarette, right? And then feeling the buzz. And then puking all over Miller's Outpost. You know, I overdid it. I overdid even a clove cigarette. I can't even smoke a clove cigarette correctly without toking it in and holding it until I can't hold my breath anymore and blowing it out like it's some sort of joint. Like I'm, oh, this makes you feel different? Let's take it to the extreme. You know, I have a friend. I shared about his struggles, you know, him getting involved with meth. And, you know, just watching and hearing about how his life is just in absolute chaos and feeling bad for him, you know, because this was a friend of mine that was sober. And, you know, the problem a lot of the times is with people that get sober is that they get sober, but they really don't have yeah, they're free from the drugs and from the alcohol, but they're also free from like social life, having fun. You know, I've always said it was the ninth one that got me sober, because the first eight were fun. The first eight drinks were fun. It's that ninth one. That ninth drink that you have to have at last call that disrupts the whole world because you're not getting your way. And, you know, if I could have been just fine with the first eight, maybe I'd, well, you know what? I'm grateful for the ninth. I'm grateful that I'm sober. But you get sober and you lose a lot of that fun. And, you know, then you start kind of weighing it out. This boring life of meetings and sobriety, all that compared to the first eight drinks that I would have and have fun and, you know, running around bars and doing all the crazy shit that we do. It is. It's worth it to me. The sober life, the boring sober life. But a lot of people struggle with that, you know. I had a lot of relationships with people through alcohol and drugs. A lot of friendships. Close friendships. Brothers. With that one thread. The alcohol drug thread. That kind of ran through all of us. And you pull that thread out. And everything just falls apart. Everything falls apart. And you know, then you find yourself alone and sober. And that's the point where you have to start figuring out, you know, a new life. And start recognizing that the life that you knew in the past is not going to look like the life that you know today. And is 10 times better the life that you have today, it's still missing that one thing, which is fun. And it's tough. And, you know, my buddy, you know, I think that's what he got sucked into. He was missing the fun. You start hanging out with a few people, and then you start justifying a few behaviors, and next thing you know, he's doing meth. And then he disappeared, and he was gone. And I was like, oh, brother. And, you know, he was rebuilding his house, and he'd be like, yeah, they ripped me off for $9,000. I'm like, yeah, of course they did, you know. These people coming into my life, stealing all my stuff. Yeah, of course they are. That's the life. You know, if you could do meth and have a decent life, I don't know, maybe more people would do it. They do it. It's called Adderall now. And you watch people's lives fall apart on Adderall, which is meth. You can't have both. And you know, my life today is very, very boring compared to the way my life used to be. But that exciting life also was, you know, had a lot of tragic nights in it. You know, tragic moments. My mom used to tell me, Septembers are your worst month. Don't know why. And I remember living that lifestyle wondering when the next shoe was going to drop. How do you build a life? How do you plan for the end? How do you build a family? How do you build a career when you're always wondering when the next shoe is going to drop? It's almost impossible. I think it's impossible to build a life and build a family if you are on drugs, for one. I couldn't even get that. I couldn't even get to the point where I had to make that choice. I was undateable. The only relationship you could have with me was a working relationship. And that was probably because I just wanted to impress my boss, so I worked hard. But it wasn't because I was a hard worker. You know, everything I did had some motivation behind it. I want to read the Daily Reflections because I haven't been doing a good job about that. So I want to read it and see how it relates to what's going on in my life today. March 13th, a world of the spirit. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. And that's found on Alcoholics Anonymous, page 84. The word entered and the phrase entered into the world of spirit are very significant. They imply action, a beginning, getting into, a prerequisite to maintaining my spiritual growth, the spirit being the immaterial part of me. Barriers to my spiritual growth are self-centeredness and a materialistic focus on worldly things. Spirituality means devotion to spiritual instead of worldly things. It means obedience to God's will for me. I understand spiritual things to be unconditional love, joy, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control, and the big one, humility. Anytime I allow selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear to be a part of me, I block out spiritual things. As I maintain my sobriety, growing spiritually becomes a lifelong process. My goal is spiritual growth, accepting that I never have spiritual perfection. Oh my gosh. I got to stretch after that. Yeah. Well, that's the second set of doors. That's the second set of doors that I had to go through. You know, the first set is just get me in the damn building. You know, I could circle the building with 100 reasons why not to go in. I could sit in the parking lot with 100 reasons why not to go in. That first fucking door to get through is such a bitch. Usually humiliation's there to help you through. In fact, I'll go out on a limb and I'm going to say that more than likely, if humiliation isn't there, you probably don't go through. And I know there's people out there that say, listen, I just got exhausted from lifting a glass of vodka to my mouth, so I got sober. Good for you, but 9 out of 10 times, I'm not sure that that's what gets us here. Humiliation, the original medication. Snaps it. And it's probably not far behind the person that comes through that first set of doors. In fact, when that does happen, getting through that first set of doors probably can't get through fast enough. When the humiliating moment shows up, the first thing you want to do is find something to make humiliation go away. Get to a meeting. Get to a psychologist. I mean, you just can't get that shit off you fast enough. Make this go away. And that usually happens through the first set of doors. You know, and if you're lucky, you find someone. You know, that's why we say, you know, if you get into those first set of doors, get yourself a little job. You know, if it's as simple as being a greeter. You know, I've talked about how it doesn't feel like we play a role at all when we first come into a program. But we do. And if someone's coming in those doors and they have humiliation right behind them and they're just looking for a friendly face and a hand to shake, knowing that maybe they're on the right track to getting humiliation out of their life, and you can be that person that puts their hand out and says, welcome, you're playing a bigger role than you think. At that point, you're playing the most important role. It isn't the steps. It isn't the coffee. It isn't the speaker. It's a face that's there to say, welcome. I know you're hurting. I've been there. It's important, I think, that we be super honest. I know it's important that I be super honest about why I'm here and what got me here. And self would like you to think that I got here because I was a burden and I drank too much and I needed to make a change. And, you know, I'm a mature guy and I, you know, I see the problem and I'm going to fix it. It wasn't the case for me. You know, I got my ass handed to me in a bar because I was fucking arguing with somebody because I needed that ninth one. The ninth one is what got me sober. or the fucking punch in my face from the guy that I was harassing because I couldn't get the ninth one, who introduced me to some humiliation. Because the guy yelling on the other side of the bar that night was all ego and self. And self wanted what self wanted, and the bartender introduced me to some humiliation. And self ran out the fucking door. He was like, shit, this is tough, I'm out. And then the only person that was sitting there on the sidewalk was humility. And the first thought wasn't, geez, well, Tom, look at you. You got yourself in another jam because of the ninth one. Now, the voice said, where can we go to escape having to explain why I'm going to have stitches again? Self. But I got here, and, you know, thank God. And the spirituality part of it is a freaking such a gift, man. I can't say it's the most exciting life, but I can tell you, you know, some of the things that I can't even list the things that have come to in my life because I've just decided to not just go through that first set of doors, but to try to get through that second set of doors. The spirituality part, the surrender part, the honesty, the courage. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I find that all that happens through the second set of doors. And I'm just beside myself with the joy that I get glimpses of that, because it isn't, I don't live in that state all the time. You know, I'm still a human being. And I think being a human self and all that stuff is a survival. It's part of us, you know, surviving. You know, I can't imagine living 1,000 years ago and, yeah, I'm not going to build a house. It'll all work out. No, it's like, fuck that. I need a good house. I'm going to build it, and it's going to be awesome. You know? It's weird. But, you know, one of the great gifts that I'm having right now is a relationship with my father. And I've always had a relationship with my father, but it's never been great. And that's what I say now. I look back at it, and he's always just, he's been, my father has been great, almost to a fault. But in the end, actually, the worst time of our relationship has been sober, when I was sober. And I don't know why. My dad comes from a generation he doesn't really understand, like spirituality, humility, self. He doesn't get any of that. You know, he's military. You know, my dad's been doing a lot of work with the VA and, you know, different people he's had to deal with through the VA. And, you know, he reached out to me the other day and he says, you know, I'm dealing with the person right now and I feel like that this person just wants drugs. You know? This person has issues with pain. And, you know, I was talking to my dad about my issues when I hurt my back and how I ended up being, you know, addicted to pills. And so he starts, you know, I'm wondering if this is what's going on with this guy. And I go, Dad, I go, you know, we don't want to become people that have to figure out if somebody's on drugs. You know, if someone is involved with the VA or whatever and they're having some challenges, you know, things need to be put in place, just like in all of our lives, right? You know, if this person wants to do this, then they should do it, and then they should bring back, you know, all the information that shows that they went ahead and went through with it, and then the VA should help them out. You know, there should be something in place, I would think, whether it's the VA or anything. You know, even my dentist. You know, I go to the dentist and, you know, there used to be a time where you just had insurance and it was covered and yada, yada. That's different, right? So now the insurance is like, listen, this is your bill. This is the part you pay. We'll send it to the insurance. We'll see what they cover. And then if you have to pay more, you have to pay more. But they just don't, they don't pay for it and then expect to get reimbursed, because that would be tough. So it's not, it's what we're all going through. But I said the important part of that is you don't want to start having to figure out if someone's on drugs. Because that's no fun, you know? And regardless if they are or not, that doesn't mean that they can't still get help. And he's like, you're right. You know, I don't want to judge and figure out if people are on drugs or taking drugs. I mean, I've been, you know, when my back hurt, I was on drugs, but I was in pain, you know. But now sober and free from the pills, you know, and I'm still in pain, but I look back and I think, you know, a pain pill of that nature wouldn't help my pain. Stretching, exercise, you know, managing in different ways helps the pain today. But, you know, I had to go through that. You know, I was on them damn pills. And humiliation showed back up. You know, those pills turn you arrogant. And the definition for me for arrogance is running by a different set of rules than most people run by. I'll never forget Matt. Guys like you and me are arrogant. I laughed, and I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? He goes, rules don't apply to you and me. When I am in that state of arrogance, rules do not apply. And when I'm on pills, I'm in full arrogant mode. Just the rule that I shouldn't be on pills doesn't apply. And you start having that swagger and that behavior, and the next thing you know, you say something or do something high on pills, and you cannot believe that the person that you've grown up with did that. Door blows open, humiliation shows up, what's up? Self's like, shit, runs out the door. I don't know anything about this, bye. Humiliation's like, dude, you're in fucked up shape right now. Let's do something about it. And you're like, yes, let's. Self's had me bound and tied up. Thank you, humiliation. And off you go. And hopefully you get better. I don't know, gone a little long. I hope everyone's having a great day. Humiliation, the original medication.